Parce que.
Yeah.
And during the year of 1983, the earnings of all the employees of Ocean Beauty was $16,300,000. And out of the $16,300,000, our stockholders earned under $700,000. And another in 81, 82, the winter of 81 and 82, we had one stockholder that was hired to go to work for Ocean Beauty Seafood. He came down to work 5 minutes to 8 in the morning, 10 after 8 he was on his way home. He was fired before he could start. And it took the shareholder advisory committee about 3 or 4 months of work before they would hire him back. And then we had another one later on that winter, was hired at Seattle Seafood, and he was going to be a forklift driver. He worked one day and was fired because they said he couldn't qualify as a forklift driver. So the next day he came down and he went to work with us at Ocean Beauty, and the first thing they put him on was a forklift. And he worked on that until he left. So it didn't hold true that one part of our company said he wasn't qualified, and yet they took him in the other one and let him go on it. And then we tried to get, a shareholder advisory committee talked to management of Sea Alaska and tried to get him to hire one of our stockholders for a watchman at Ocean Beauty Seafoods, because there were so many, you know, there were herring pumps that were worth about $12,000 that was stolen off the dock. There was power blocks worth about $6,000 stolen. The carpenter told me that he couldn't buy plywood, 2x4s or anything, because if he ordered it on Friday, got it on Friday, by Monday he wouldn't have it because other employees working there would take it during the weekend. And this is the reason we tried to get someone in there. But Ocean Beauty management said that it didn't warrant, there wasn't enough taken from the company to have someone hired down there. Yet there was diesel oil and gasoline taken off of the tenders all winter as they laid at the docks.
Where is the dock?
Pardon me?
Where is that?
The location?
Yeah.
It's 1100 West Ewing here in Seattle. And to talk about the hiring of our people, you know, I think there's more problems with people other than stockholders that work for some of our companies. Like, we had a superintendent that was at Uganic, and then he wound up in Peterson Point. And our president at that time in Sea Alaska was told by one of the employees that they had a people, this superintendent had a people problem. He didn't know how to handle people, and no one could work with him. And he said, for the good of the company, that man should not be here. And yet it took 2.5 years after that before they let him go. And it took many, many letters that they asked me to have people write about this person, because he couldn't handle people, he didn't want our stockholders, and he even fired me because he wanted another person to run a boat that had no experience. And he made excuses that I didn't answer radio schedules and just fabricated stories to get rid of me. And then I think it was 2 years ago, there was a annual meeting in Ketchikan, and the president of Ocean Beauty Seafood got up and told us that if we got our kids into colleges and they got degrees, then they could put them into middle management training positions. But yet after he told us this, they took a man that was a cook in both Uganic and Ikigig in Bristol Bay and made him assistant superintendent in Ikigig Cannery, and he had no degrees of any kind. And then in Ketchikan, they took another one that was a fisherman. He was a non-shareholder with no degrees either, and they made him second in command in Cake and Ketchikan Coal Storage, where he flies between both towns 3 days a week, in one place 3 days a week in the other. And then we have another one that is going to go this summer to the plant in Petersburg, and the only reason he's going there to run the cannery is because he's a friend of the president of Ocean Beauty Seafood, and he has no experience in salmon. So he's really going to be in training like any one of us would be if we were in his place. And I don't think that's fair to any of our people either. And our subsistence really is gone, and now the federal and the state control the fishing and hunting, and then a long time ago, and not even too long ago, our people used to go out and fish and hunt, and whenever they wanted some meat, they could go and get it. Today, they can't do it. One fellow from our home had a piece of halibut on the stove, and it was, season wasn't on yet for halibut, and he got caught by the trooper, and it cost him $2,000 for that piece of halibut. And where a few years ago he could have had it without asking anyone to take it, now you have to get permission to do it. And a lot of times you're a long way from the state fish and game, and it's hard to get to them to ask them, and it costs you more money than it would if you just ordered it on a plane to come from town. And then we talk about maybe the stock of our corporations may be sold back to the corporation after or about 1991. Then what about the, I want to know about the corporations that maybe don't have enough money to buy one stockholder share of stock. Then what are we going to do? And then a lot of people that I've talked to have said, because we don't have the jobs from our own companies, and we have no dividends from our corporation either. For those two reasons, a lot of our people are saying that they're going to sell their stock. So I don't think that should happen either. I think that when the heads of our corporation and our subsidiaries don't make us any money, they should be moved out and make room for someone that's willing to try and do a better job than who was there before. That's about all I have for today.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Matthews.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Could you come to the mic, Soloway?
My name is Lucille Oliver. I was going to ask Gil, why shouldn't the shareholders working together to divest themselves from Ocean Beauty Seafoods? Because when Sea Alaska purchased the company, didn't they also acquire all the personnel employed plus their stock ownership in Ocean Beauty at the time? And it seems Ocean Beauty has been a thorn. Why can't we just get rid of it and form another company that doesn't have employees at the time?
I don't see how I can answer that, because I have no control over, I can't say that we could get rid of it. I wish we could, because we don't get enough money out of it. I have heard that we only get 1% of what they gross down there to come back to Sea Alaska, and 1% of nothing is nothing, so we're getting nothing. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel that we should keep any company that's an anchor around our necks, because we don't even know how our companies are making out whether they're earning any money or not. The companies between Montana, Idaho, and Eastern Washington, or anywhere down the Columbia River. You know, we've never found, I've never heard of whether we made any profits or what our losses might be in any one of them, because they seem to have it all in one lump sum when it comes out in the annual report, so we never hear anything.
Thank you, Gil.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews.
Welcome.
My name is Lauren James. My mailing address is Box 16, Hayes Route, Woodland, Washington, although I live here in Seattle. That's my mailing address. I'd like to address one issue that was previously brought up, which was voting rights, and along with that, the issuance of new stock to people born after the critical date. By 1991, there will be some, perhaps, it's estimated that there will be 40,000 new eligible shareholders. And if we give them voting rights and stock, well, we will have absolutely zero control over our corporation, and we have very little now. And our stock is worth very little now. Then it will be worth less. I think that, as some other people have stated, it would be better if we took care of this within our own families, as custom has had it. We will be able to split our stocks as well to our children rather than sharing it with everybody else, and just let's take care of it that way instead of pushing it through Sealaska. They can use this to their advantage again to be able to influence these people that perhaps haven't experienced some of the things that we have and to gain a firmer control of the company. We don't want that. At least I don't. And I know a lot of people don't either. And the land is something that's very important to all of us. I'm opposed to losing any of our land to non-native control or to non-native corporations in any fashion. I think, though, that maintaining it in the present corporation control as it is right now is a grave mistake. They have never given us any dividends from the timber that they have harvested, and how can we expect them to do better in the future? 14 years is a long time to be able to harvest timber at a profit, and to not be able to do that in that time period would, to me, pose grave doubts as to their future abilities. And the land is really what, how many of us have benefited from in hunting and fishing from our lands? I would imagine none of us. If anybody here has, correct me. I don't know of anybody that has. And I think that that allowing it to go, again, I think allowing it to go to non-native hands is a mistake, but keeping in Sealaska's hands is just as bad. It's not going to help us. So I have a proposal that I would like to submit, and that is that it be put into it remain inalienable, but not under corporate control any longer, and that it be divided perhaps into smaller groups of natives, such as the 13th region. I believe has some 33,000 acres that are supposedly allotted to us, but we can't control it right now under Sealaska Corporation that has control of it, and we do not. And of course, we all know that we have really no voice in what the directors do. We say one thing and they do another. In a sense, it's destroying our way of life. Our Indian ways are disappearing quickly. Our language is disappearing quickly. Our use of the land has gone. I think it would be a great benefit if we could have the land reassigned, the acreage reassigned to different areas that would be more useful. Rather than blocked in large groups, it would perhaps be better if smaller groups or even large families could have the acreage allotted to them, of course, proportionally to the amount of shareholders. And I'm not sure, too. Another thing that I would like to see looked into is do we have hunting and fishing subsistence rights on the land that Sea Alaska does own now? I'm not even sure. I've studied that out, and I haven't been able to find an answer to it. I don't know what would happen if we went hunting on our land, but I imagine we would be arrested. So I'd like to see that changed. I don't know how. I don't have any idea how to go about this, but I imagine that this 1991 issue, we could bring up a lot of these issues before Congress at the same time that these eight proposals, which are only to maintain present Sea Alaska control. I'm opposed to any proposal that Sea Alaska or the AFN has brought before us. I'm opposed to it strictly on the grounds that they have done so poorly in the past. How can we benefit from it in the future? Sure, it's going to be in native hands, but whose native hands? The corporations, the board of directors, not us. So as far as alienability or inalienability in the 1991 issue, I don't really want to sell my stocks. I am opposed to seeing our land go away, but I am also opposed to seeing present control continued. I would like to see the land separated from the corporation, and that the land would be held in trust for us, inalienable for forever, for eternity, but that the corporation's other assets, the company assets, that stock would be inalienable in 1991. Now that wasn't proposed, that wasn't one of their proposals, but I would like to see that, and I would like to see the kind of support there is for that kind of idea, because there is no sense jeopardizing our land for the poor corporate ventures that they have made a habit of. And also, I'd like to see more control, more shareholder control. I questioned the board, some of the members of the board of Sea Alaska, and question them as to why they haven't hired the natives. And they claim they don't have direct control. That's just plain not true. If they can't fire them, who can? And if they can't be fired, then there is no corporation. But I know that's not true, but yet they refuse to do anything about it. I don't know, it seems to me like if they won't do it, we need to elect directors to the that will do it, and I would like to see all of you people vote for somebody that would do that. I think that's probably enough for now.
Okay, thank you, Mr. James. Thank you.
My name's Valerie Yuckluck. I don't belong to any of the native corporations. My husband does. I'm speaking for him. And the thing that we think is about the land is that, well, he has a sister who lives on welfare. She lives in one of the villages in a one-room shack with no running water. And then there's people that live right downtown in this is Bristol Bay Native Corporation, who live right downtown in Dillingham, who are on the board of directors, who live in big houses and make, you know, 60,000-70,000 a year. Well, I think that she should be able to, when it comes 1991, she should be able to sell her stocks or her land just to make herself a better way of life, a better living. She is in debt, and how else is she ever going to get out of that unless she has a chance to sell her stocks or her land? And that's about all I have to say.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
My name is Mary Furlong, and I used to be a teacher up in Alaska. And I met a lot of people up there while I was teaching school, just like that lady said. A lot of them were living on welfare. But what they could have done is gone with their whole family group or their village and help each other. And I have seen a lot of that happening down in Aleutian Islands. But I don't think that, for me and myself, I don't think that woman or whoever, just because she's living on welfare, I think she should ask the Dillingham people if, because I heard that my village could order new housing, and the housing people will send the house prefab, and they could have a good house just as good as the person that's taking care of the, what did you say, taking care of the what do you call you people?
Corporation, I guess.
Corporation. I couldn't remember. Taking care of the corporation. No, that woman could have her own prefab if she asked her village corporation to, and a lot of other people that in the same village, in the same group, they can ask their village counselors, because each village is getting money from the corporation. And I know that's for a fact, because my name is in with my village, and they are getting money on my behalf, even if I am living down here. And if I want to go back up again, all I have to do is put in my name to get a prefab house to set up in my own village, and I could go back there and live. Even if you're living on welfare or whatever. It's true, but I don't think people should try to get rid of their own land, because I am living downtown here where I see people sleeping in the streets, underneath bridges, no place to go because nobody tells them where to go eat, and I've seen them starve and die in the streets. Now, if you people could... look after each other and your land. I don't think that would happen. So as far as I'm concerned, you should be able to take and grab hold of that land and save it. No matter how poor you get, because you can always go out fishing or whatever. Your great-grandfathers did it, and all the, your whole family tree was there and lived off the land, and nobody was there to help them. That's how come you're sitting there. So therefore, I think you are smarter. You went to school, and I should think that you should be able to take care of the rest of your people out in their villages. And as for me, the reason why I'm dressed like this is I have ESP, and I know that a lot of you other people have ESP, and nobody wants to say anything about it. And I know that Jesus Christ is coming, and that was proven by the scientists and everything. So that's why I'm dressed in sackcloth, because I want my people to be ready to welcome him when he comes. That's all I have to say for right now.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, Ms. Furlong. Well, I thought maybe we could take a 5-minute break for coffee and then resume. Just take a little break for a few minutes. Well, maybe we should get underway again, folks, and if you'd like to take a seat, please feel free to do so.
Mr. Berger, my name is George James. I'm a Sea Alaska shareholder. I campaigned for a position on the Sea Alaska board in 1984. Also, I attended the last meeting that the Sea Alaska board had at the Monroe Center. I also watched the videotapes that they provided for us shareholders to view. I listened to various shareholders make their viewpoints and how Sea Alaska has operated thus far. From what I heard from various shareholders, they were very disappointed with the way the Sea Alaska has been operated thus far. I also had the privilege of speaking during that meeting and giving my opinion. Some of the board of directors have been serving on the Sea Alaska board of directors since Sea Alaska originated. If these directors were looking after our shareholders' interest, we shareholders would not be in the situation we are today. We wouldn't have to be worrying about losing our corporation by going bankrupt, or our corporation being taken over, or our sales, our stocks going on the open market, or losing our lands for failure to pay our taxes. A provision should have been made to us native shareholders for this, for us not losing these lands and shares when ANSCA first started. Us natives were never defeated by the U.S. and the U.S. government in battle. In fact, us native chased the Russians out of Alaska. That's the reason why we have Alaska today. I can't see why the board of directors is stressing 1991 so bad when they haven't proved themselves as businessmen to date. The board of directors has not paid us $1 in dividends to date. I would like to have the privilege of looking after my own stock when the time comes and deciding what I want to do with it, and choose to sell it if I want to the highest bidder, and hopefully I would be able to sell it back to Sea Alaska if I so choose, so it would remain in Indian hands. Also, I would like to know why the Sea Alaska shareholders at large were not issued any land. I'm just as much an Indian as anyone else, probably even more so than most. If our corporations go bankrupt, some of those people have lands to fall back on. I don't. I don't have any lands to fall back on. I would like to know why these options were not given to me. Like I said earlier, I campaigned for a position on the board in 1984. And during the election, we had one fellow that campaign for us in Ketchikan. He took proxies out to several shareholders. He accumulated several votes for us. And yet, his vote did not count for me when it came time to count elections or ballots. The management took his vote to count for them because he failed to fill in the date. So I challenged that. So when we went to the inspector of elections, I asked to look at his proxy in particular. He had one proxy there for us and one for management. I asked him, why wasn't his vote counted? He said, well, he failed to fill in the date. Well, I said, I would like to see management's proxy. He signed management's proxy with a blue ink pen, but the date was filled in with a red ink pen. Management changed that to their vote. I'm in favor of leaving the shares the way they are. I don't think we need any additional shareholders in our corporation. If you get a person that's less than a quarter Indian, he's no longer an Indian. You'll have to wonder what culture this guy is going to be for. Is he going to be for the Indian culture or the white man's culture? He's got more white in him than he has Indian. Also, to date, the only people that has benefited by Sea Alaska is the non-Sea Alaska native. So the white people is the only ones benefited by it so far. They're the ones that have the jobs, and we don't. They get to set their own wages. They get to set their own salaries. Take, for instance, Ocean Beauty. Since the time we purchased Ocean Beauty, they have taken in $600 million, Ocean Beauty alone has. That's one entity. That's almost what we won in the land suit. And they made less than $7 million in profit. This was from Vic Horgan himself at the shareholders meeting in June. He's the one that told us that. And I think it's high time that we made a change around, and us Indians are always on the outside looking in. I think there's time for a change. And I plan to do something about that. I plan to run for the board again in 85. And also, I'm opposed to the 8 resolutions that Sea Alaska is supposed to present to Congress. They're too vague and they're too hard to understand. I can't see the same people looking after my interests another 12 years when they haven't proved themselves thus to date. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. James.
Mr. Justice Berger, my name is Kurt Engelstad. I'm president of the 13th Regional Corporation. Appreciate the opportunity to testify before your commission, and we look forward to the results that will be completed and hopefully available come September. I'll try to respond to some of your commission's requests for information. I have this in printed form. I'll try to summarize some of it, not to unduly take time that others may want to spend here with you this afternoon. In 1983, when I first became involved with the 13th Regional Corporation as a member of the board and in management, I caused to have circulated a questionnaire to the 4,000 shareholders whose names we had. There's another approximately 900 shareholders whose names we don't have, but are on our rolls still as registered holders of shares in our corporation. The response to this questionnaire.
You mean addresses?
Excuse me?
You've got their names.
We have their names, but we have no idea where they are living.
No.
Oh, there.
Sorry.
It's okay. We had responses from 864 of our shareholders, which I'm told on a blind mailing is fairly significant. I guess the folks that know about these things say if you get a 2-3% response, you're doing pretty well. And we got a good return from our people. And what we were trying to do is set up a general profile. It was a confidential survey, so there wasn't information requested on who these people were other than they were our shareholders. Of the 864 who responded, we broke this into percentages, and I'll summarize some of this. 26% were on some type of government assistance, and most of it on general social assistance, welfare.
What was that percentage?
Of the 26% who were receiving government assistance,
oh, right.
86% of that number, almost all of them, were on general social or assistance or welfare. Schooling, 31% had completed elementary school, 46% had completed secondary education, high school, 5% had completed 2 years of college, 1% had an undergraduate degree, 6% had a graduate degree, and 3% had a GED equivalence. The ages of the age grouping of the people responding were pretty evenly spread between 18 to 25 was one grouping that made up about 20% of the response. 26 to 35, 27% of the response, 36 to 45, 18%, 46 to 60, 18%, and 13% of those responding were 60 or over. Their earnings were also grouped in our general salary ranges. 22% were earning between $2,000 and $5,000 per annum. 17% between $5,000 and $10,000 per annum, $10,000 to $20,000 per annum, 19%. Very few above that, only about 10% in the higher categories. Most of those responding were married. Most of them responded that their health was good. And not too much of an indication on any special training. We're trying to pinpoint what special skills might be available. There were 5% of those responding were professional people or identified themselves as professional people, 13% as semi-professional or white-collar workers, 12% as skilled laborers or blue-collar, 14% unskilled, 31% were not in the labor force, 21% unemployed, gives you a bit of a rundown on the response we got from the 83 survey. And I'll leave this with your clerk so that I have a copy of it. A couple of other comments on the what you're trying to do here. I think, as a lot of the people here know, the 13th Regional Corporation has been the black sheep of the family as far as Alaska Native corporations. It's been accused of that, perhaps with some cause. In other respects, perhaps not. I heard one young man testifying earlier today regarding land that the 13th has. And as you probably know from reading the Act, the 13th Regional Corporation got no land at all under the Alaska Native Claims Act. My understanding of the history of that was it was a trade-off with the influential members of the State of Washington congressional delegation who were pushing for a corporation for natives outside of the state of Alaska, and the trade-off was that kind of a result, that they would allow a 13th Regional Corporation to come into being, but the penalty was if there were enough people who wanted to belong to it to form a corporation would be that they got no land, and the 13th has not and will not receive any land in the Alaska Native Claims Act. The 13th Regional Corporation has not and what are called 7I revenues, that is the monies that the other 12 corporations inside the state of Alaska receive from timber severance, minerals, and subsurface mineral rights. Those are pooled on a regular basis and divided amongst the other 12 corporations on a pro rata basis. The other 12 corporations receive millions of dollars each year from that source. the 13th receives nothing. All the 13th got, and I don't mean to minimize it, was the initial distribution of dollars from the federal government, which amounted to about $54 million. Half of that amount was passed through to the shareholders, tax-free, as provided by law, and the other half was retained by the corporation to use in business investments. I have the feeling as a shareholder that looking back on it with some history now of what's happened with the 13th and the financial problems it's had, that the 13th maybe from the beginning was really made, the shareholders of the 13th were indeed made out to be second-class citizens by the Act, in that their corporation got no land and does not continue to share in the 7i revenues. I doubt very much if Congress will ever amend the Act to provide for that, but it is of great concern to our shareholders. One of the main things that our shareholders who talk with me ask about is, when are we going to get our land? The only land the 13th has is 40 acres of land that we bought in Cold Bay on the Aleutian Chain at an auction, and we bought it from the state of Alaska. Well, that's it. We had to go buy our land. As it turned out, we're using some of that land to lease to the oil companies for exploratory drilling in the Bering Sea, and so we're realizing some revenue income from that for the corporation. But it seems to me a little disparate when simply by a choice of a stroke of a pen on a piece of paper at a time when many of us did not realize the import of what we were doing in opting for the 13th, we removed ourselves from participation with the other 12 in the lands and in the 7i revenues. And that's probably the one flaw of the Act that most affects the shareholders of the 13th Regional Corporation. Most of our shareholders do live outside the state of Alaska. We have a few hundred in the state. We have most of the rest of our shareholders living in the Seattle area, Portland, Oregon area, where I live, in the Bay Area in California, and in Southern California. And the rest are literally spread out all over the world. I guess the reason that I feel so keenly now about the inability of our corporation to be able to participate in the lands and 7i revenues and for our shareholders is that our corporation had, as many people here know, some severe financial problems in years past. By the time I got involved with the corporation some 2 years ago, it was in extremely weak financial condition. We're still struggling. I think we're going to make it. The corporation may not be what it could have been had it been propped up to some extent by the continued influx of money from land revenues that the other corporations share in. It's been my observation that some of the other corporations inside of Alaska, although they too have had problems financially and have sustained rather significant losses, they've been able to offset those to some degree by the new money coming in, whereas the 13th, as I've said, got its funds and that was all it received. It's very difficult to run a corporation like the law says we have to run it when there is almost no money with which to run it. I'm sure, as Mr. Justice Berger knows, you have to do annual audits, you have to report to your shareholders, you have to have annual shareholder meetings. There are a number of things that you have to do or you can be sued for it. And in order to do that, it's expensive. Each time we make a mailing to our shareholders, for example, the 4,000 or so for whom we have addresses, with a medium amount of printed material in it, it probably costs us about $15,000. Now, that may not seem a lot to some of the other Alaska Native corporations who have millions. But in the last couple of years since I've been involved with the 13th, that's a lot of money for us. We've had to cut back in many areas simply to survive for better times, looking for income from business opportunities that we've tried to develop since new management has participated in the company. But I know one of the concerns you have or is addressed in this is the possible bankruptcy of the corporations and what will happen if that happens. And the laws that were created supposedly to help the corporations or at least get them started are the same laws which make it expensive for the corporations to operate. Just to maintain shareholder records and to keep track of where everybody is, you have to have people doing that, and then you have to commit an expense for it. And our folks traditionally move a lot. That doesn't surprise me at all. I spent 10 years working at the Urban Indian Center in Portland, Oregon, so I have some feeling with the urban setting and how not only our Native Alaska people, but those of other tribes of the lower 48 live, and they do move around a lot. And that's their way of life, and that's fine. But you've got a law that says the corporation has to keep track of those folks. In order for the company to conduct business, it has to have so many shareholders represented either in person or by proxy at a meeting, or you have to keep having a meeting after meeting after meeting, or mailing, sending out more mail, asking, please send your proxies in so we can have a legal meeting. And that gets terribly frustrating. And I'm sure that our shareholders are frustrated in the 13th. The company's never been able to pay dividends. It hears from the company infrequently because the company can't always afford to communicate with its own people. But I guess the good news, if there is some for our corporation, is I do feel we've managed to pretty well stop the losses, get the company turned around, and I think this year we probably will have accomplished that, but it will be a long road back for us because the funds that were lost in times past just aren't going to be recovered that quickly. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Engelstad. Could I ask you a couple of questions?
Sure.
Is the 13th Corporation incorporated under Alaska state law or Washington state law?
Under Alaska state law. It's required under the act that all of the corporations are formed under Alaska state law. So we're an Alaska-formed corporation with a base in Bellevue now. We've moved our offices from Seattle to Bellevue.
And